Okay. Looks like it's about 11:30. So, welcome back. Talk about the chain rule some more. The polar Laplacian is very interesting, but it was just taking too much time. So, now I've got to spend another day on the chain rule, though I didn't originally plan to. So, this is a handout. I was going to bring this Tuesday, but anyways, just as well. I wouldn't have had time for it. There's two examples that talk about three cases of the chain rule. I give one case, and then you turn the page into two more cases. And you can think of these as the three most common cases. Right? And you already know the single variable chain rule from calculus, right? Mapped to u by some function g, which gets mapped to y by some function f, right? You're very familiar with that chain rule. Calculus 3 analogs are not always so obvious, but the way I think about it is in terms of the differentials. So I think of this equation here, dy dx equals dy du times du dx, in terms of differentials. So I think of it as, okay, if y is f of variable u there, then the differential would be f prime of u times du. And if u is g of x, then its differential is g prime of x times dx. So that's how I think of it. And so you see the f prime of u. See if I can fix all my little mistakes here. Some places I have f right here at g. Maybe I need to elaborate on this more. So on the one hand, I have g of f of x prime, or why did you bring g of f of g prime? Right. The derivative of the composite function that takes you all the way from x to y times dx, that's dy. But dy is also equal to f prime of u du, but then du is equal to g prime of x dx, so it works out this way.
And if you want it in terms of the original variables, it looks like this. So there's, in that chain rule, there's really three different, you could say, differential equations, right? Equations between differentials, right here. And by matching these three equations, I get a chain rule. Now what happens on these examples in the handout? Similar stuff, right? The first example, this multivariable stuff. So in terms of all the variables, maybe I'll do a diagram first of all. We have an x and a y, and then we have intermediate variables u and v, right? U is a function of x and y, v is a function of x and y, and then finally we have z. Now what is the chain rule for this one? Well, for example, if I want partial z, partial x, it ends up being partial z, partial u, partial x, plus partial z, partial v, partial x, y. Because we have three differential equations here. On the one hand, in terms of u and v, the differential dz is equal to the following tangent plane approximation. Right? Some numbers du and dv as inputs to give you z. So you multiply by their partial derivatives, and that's the change in height on the tangent plane. But then you can also think of du and dv as themselves now changes in heights on other tangent planes. We're now thinking of x and y as inputs. This is u, du, right, as its own tangent plane approximation now, and then same for dv. And now, like last time, we collect the like terms. In this case, look at the dx terms, right? Put them all together. So you have partial z, partial u, partial x. The first dx term, then here's the other dx term. Partial z, partial v, partial x. All times dx. And then you have some dy terms. Partial z, partial u, partial y, plus partial z, partial v, partial y. Okay, so this is dz regrouped, right? And but on the other hand, dz is, you can also think of z as a function of x and y. Right? Instead of thinking of z as a function of the intermediate inputs u and v, you think of it as, oh, okay, I start with X and Y as my inputs, and I do some stuff, but at the end of the day I get a Z, right? Forgetting about the stuff that's in the middle, then you would just have this kind of tangent point approximation. You would have partial Z, partial X, dx, plus partial Z, partial Y, dy. And so dx and dy there are the ultimate inputs, or I should say the initial inputs, I guess. Right. So you can plug in any change for x as your dx, and any change for y as your dy. And then that'll induce approximate changes on the uv tangent planes, the du and the dv. Right? And that in turn induces approximate changes on the dz tangent plane height. Right? But the point is, these terms here have to match these terms here, because these have to match for any numbers dx and dy that you plug in. So the only way they can match is if the coefficients plug in. So in particular, if you just want, say, the x partial, you're just going to be grabbing the dx terms. So that's the general principle behind all these chain rules. You can see the same thing on the next two examples. Again, if you have the differential, if you have the differentials, then you can figure out the chain rule by collecting the appropriate terms. Here's a little story problem that uses this kind of multivariable chain rule. Okay. I guess this was type 1. 2 and 3 are also in the handout thing. So anyway, back to my little story problem here. I have a particle moving at velocity 3, 4, 5 in a tank of water where at the particle's current position capital T has the following partial derivatives. So if you change your position in the x direction, the temperature is not changing, at least not in this region. Change in the y direction, the temperature will go up if you increase y. And if you increase z, the temperature will go down, a rate of negative 2 per unit z increase. So now we can ask, what is the rate of change of temperature T of the water around the particle? So the particle is moving. It's either moving into colder water or warmer water. And we can ask, okay, at what rate? So this does not match exactly any of the three cases in the handout. I would say it's closest to the second one. The difference is now there's three intermediate variables. But here's how I'd think about it. So I'm going to have the tangent plane. Well, I guess now we're in a higher dimension, so I should say tangent hyperplane, or I should just say linear approximation. Yeah. So the linear approximation of temperature changes is given by that formula, right? You have some little changes in x, y, and z. Multiply them by the appropriate slopes, right? Those are the partial derivatives, right? And that tells you the approximate change in temperature. It'll be a good approximation if all these little d numbers involved with dx, dy, and dz are small. Okay. But what do I know about how a position x, y, z is changing? Okay, so let's let t be time here, lowercase t. Well, now I have a velocity of 3 in the x direction. So for a small change in time, I have to multiply that by 3 to get the approximate change in x. And then likewise for the dy and dz, right? Because the velocity, that's the 3, 4, 5, it was velocity mean. It's exactly the three coordinates time derivatives by definition. So of course, this is what we should get. If you interpret the dx as, by definition, a derivative times a change in input, then these become literal fractions, right? And these are actual equations between numbers. So, put it all together. The first and the third row. So I wanted the rate of change of the temperature. So rate of change of temperature with respect to time is what I'm after here. So I'm going to have partial t, partial x times 3 plus partial t, partial y times 4 plus partial t, partial z times 5. Ah, but I know what the partials are, so it's 0 times 3 plus negative 1 times 4 plus positive 1 times 4 plus negative 2 times 5. So negative 6. If you do enough of these chain rules, you can actually memorize the pattern. You don't have to work through all this differential stuff, right? And if you know matrices, then it's really elegant. So if I have z as a function of a whole bunch of intermediate variables u, U1 through UM, and each of those is in turn some function of variables X1 through XN, right? Then you can think of Z as depending on the X's, with kind of the U's is just an intermediate step in the computation. So you can make a big matrix here. Each row is going to be an x partial derivative. You can think of this, okay, take partial derivatives in the x coordinate system, right? N dimensions, n different x coordinates there, right? So not x is the horizontal direction, but just n variables for position n dimensional space. And it becomes a big matrix vector multiplication. So for the first row, we're going to have partial z, partial u1, all the way to partial z, partial um, and that will get multiplied in matrix multiplication sense by partial u1, partial u1, partial x1 through partial first row, you have all those partials, and then in here is actually where the z, the other z partials are. For some reason, I wanted to put the partial z, partial u's in the middle, probably because of what I was writing the other board. But actually, for the matrix vector, you want to put them over here. Subscripts, right? Eventually. Yes. So that's the very, very general pattern. That's how it gets stated in linear algebra. You could think of it as you want to understand the partial derivatives of z in the u-coordinate system and in the x-coordinate system. Well, how do we go back and forth between the two coordinate systems? And the answer is you multiply by a matrix. And the matrix has got all the partial derivatives where you take the various functions that connect the x-coordinates to the u-coordinates. That's the very, very general pattern. But I don't require you to know that. The way we teach things here is we usually do calculus 3 and linear algebra at the same time, or calculus 3 first. Right? In theory, you could require linear algebra to be done first, but in practice, that's not done very often. Although there are some schools that combine them into one big course with more credit hours. There are also schools that combine linear algebra and differential equations into one big course. So, choices. But that's a very, very general pattern. But if you can't memorize the pattern, you can always have some mix where you memorize a certain number of special cases, and if you don't recognize a case, you go back to the first principles where you you match the terms and the differentials. Right? Whenever I use the tangent approximations, the linear approximations, then I can recover whatever I need. And the handout also has some proofs of some abstract facts. I don't require you to know the proofs, but I thought you might find them interesting. Some of you, anyway. I was doing things a little differently than the book, as you may recall, the whole disc versus rectangles issue. So, since I stated things a little differently, I thought I'd give the proof in terms of how I was talking in class. Another problem. Okay. A little spherical coordinate problem. Okay, let's say we're on the Earth. So I'm going to have units of 10 to the 6 meters for distance. And let's say we're in Laredo, so about, okay, the co-latitude is 90 degrees minus our latitude, so about 62 and a half degrees. And then, what was this one? 99 and a half or something?
Well, I think that's our longitude.
But if I'm wrong, this is just going to be a problem about some other location. So let's say we change our coordinates that way. So let's say we're moving from here. So this is our current position. And then let's say we start moving at this velocity. What's going to happen? What's going to happen to our radial coordinate? Are we going to go up or down in altitude? And what's going to happen to our co-latitude? And what's going to happen to our longitude? Approaches to this. One way is you write the spherical to Cartesian transformation equations, and then you you take partial derivatives, hit that with a chain rule, but then you end up having to solve a system of three equations and three variables. So since we do know the way to go back from Cartesian to spherical, that will actually be the less painful path here. So, let's see here. I'll just do this one by cases. Derivatives. So in this case, the partial derivatives are like this. Just take the x partial and then the y partial and then the z partial, and you always get the input variable divided by the output. It's a little cancellation there. So I just take the derivative. Remember, this is just d rho dx with y z constant. Right? And the others are the same. So I get that. And so if you want the time derivative, just divide by dt. So in our case, we'll have x times 3 plus y times 0 plus z times 1, all divided by rho. But what are x, y, and z now? Okay. Well, now we need the other direction, right? From spherical to Cartesian. So you plug in all those numbers. This is like one of the homework, right? I had to find x and y and z positions of the radio. Right. We can get this. We can simplify this one a little bit, right? The x's have a factor of rho. X, y, and z each have a factor of rho that's going to get canceled out. So we have cosine theta sine phi times 3, nothing from here, and then plus cosine phi. And what's that sign? 62.5. get that. So that's the rate of change in altitude. It's a radial coordinate change. And then you can do something here, okay? Okay, so we got the rate of change of road. Now look at feet. More chain rule stuff here. Okay, so we need to remember what the derivative of the arc cosine is. So its derivative is 1 over 1 minus, sorry, 1 over the square root of 1 minus its input squared. Did I get that right? There's a negative 1 on top. All times the differential of z over rho. So right there, we're using the fact that you know, the arc cosine of u, its derivative is this. So I'm just taking the differential of this arc cosine. And now I have another thing here, right? I have the differential of z over rho. Okay, well, when am I going to do that? Okay, so I need to take partial derivatives, right? Take the z partial derivative. And multiply it by dz. Right. Take the rho partial derivative and multiply it by d rho. So that this is a chain rule again, right? This was a calculus one chain rule or tangent plane approximation, right? Now here I'm using another calculus three linear approximation, right? So for the first part, I take the derivative with rho held constant. I'm taking the z derivative. For the other part, I take the rho derivative. Okay. Now that's actually pretty good for me. So now d phi dt then. So divide all this by dt. And it's all almost all in terms of stuff we know. We know the dz dt. We just figured out the d rho dt. We haven't actually figured out z. Although z is rho times the cosine of theta. So you could actually write it like this. Sorry, not cosine of theta, cosine of phi.
Multiplied by the d rho dt?
I get that right. I think it's just like this. Yes, we're multiplying. Okay. Multiplication. I see that. Turn the z into a rho cosine phi, and then one of these rows in the rho squared denominator gets canceled, and then the other rho I factored out for that. And that you can actually now get a number for, right? We know the row. We know the we know the dz dt. That's just one. Subtract the cosine of 62.5 degrees. I used that cosine earlier right here. And then multiply by our change in row, which we know. And we get about positive 1.551, et cetera. Oh, the times 10 to the minus 1, so 0.1. Okay. So that's the change in co-latitude. You'd have the opposite change in latitude, or rate of change is what I should say, right? Rate of change.
Questions about this?
We ignore the units, sir. 10 to 6 power.
Well, okay. This is in units of radians. This one, okay, is in units of 10 to the 6 meters. So move the decimal place over six to the right if you want in meters. Okay. Okay, this is... So to be clear here, this is in radians. But there's a whole other issue here of what's the unit of time, right? Because this is actually a rate, right? So you'd have to actually write radians per unit time.
Unit time?
Yeah. Like, is this per hour, per second, per year? I didn't say. But it's right. The d phi here, I outputted. My calculator output something in radians, right? You'd have to multiply this by 180 divided by pi if you wanted the rate of change in degrees per unit time. You need a unit time, right? Because there's a dt in the denominator, right? How much does phi change when you make a small change in time, right? Approximately this much. Times the dt, right? The d phi is a change, the dt is a change. This is the ratio, the rate. There's one more part to get, right? There's the theta, right? Okay. So you can do the same kind of stuff to figure out the d theta dt. If you use this differential approach, right, what are you doing? You're just doing linear approximations over and over and over again, right? This is a calculus one differential or linear approximation. And then my second step for phi was a calculus three linear approximation, a tangent approximation. Let's remember what's going on. So, one. This is what we had in calculus one. And now what we have in calculus three is stuff more like this. Derivatives, right? You can also write it with this notation, right? one you want. Chain rule is just chaining together a bunch of these kinds of approximations. These are all linear approximation formulas, right? Change in x times slope of the tangent line is approximately the change in the height on the curve. Y. Change in both inputs now, multiplied by corresponding slopes, added together, gives you change in height on the tangent plane, which is approximately the change in height on your curved surface. Right? All you have to do is just chain these kinds of things together. That's all I'm doing in these things here. I have something, and I look at the change in terms of a linear approximation. And I was thinking z over rho is one input variable, so I just had this. Okay. Now I was thinking of z and rho as separate inputs. So I ended up with two differentials. Here I had three inputs, x, y, z. So there were three terms in my linear approximation, dy, dx, dz. Anyways, have you guessed what your homework is?
Yeah.
We're on day 26. Yeah, we didn't quite finish it, right?
Oh, okay.
I got the change in altitude, the change in co-latitude, but I didn't get the change in longitude. Okay. Any other questions? As usual, the book has plenty of good stuff to say about this also, so make sure you read that as well. See you tomorrow.